Hello, Mike. Can you hear us okay?
I can you hear me?
Yeah, looks like we're all technically going this side, which is a nice start.
Hey.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we've often wasted up to 5 minutes on that before, just trying to get the sound coming
Yeah,
through all
it's a
right.
back and forth. Hello? Can you hear? Hello?
Yeah, so irritating. So, how are things going today?
Not too bad, thank you. Just sitting in my car on my drive, trying to find somewhere quiet away from the kids.
And what better place than a new car?
Yeah, I was going to go in the shed, but I'd have to move the lawnmower out when it's raining over across here in Hull, so I thought I'd just come and sit somewhere dry.
I think they're both classic dad hideaways, aren't they? Sheds and cars.
Sheds, cars, pub.
Absolutely. 10 minutes later, I'd have been in
Yeah.
the
I think you're getting my rain because it's funny because Mike's, as he said, is in Hull, and that's really just a little bit above me where I am. I think you might be getting my rain that we had earlier.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries, no worries. But let's get off the classic British subject of the weather. And ask about vegetables. So, because we were absolutely loving that music, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about bringing that together and writing for the C64.
Oh, well, thank you. Writing for the C64 is actually a pretty new thing for me. I had a 64 back in the 80s when I was kind of like sort of 8, 9 years old up until about the age of 12. And anybody who's had a C64 knows that the SID chip and the music on that was one of the really defining things of that particular machine. We had arguments about who had the best games and which was the best graphics, but there was absolutely no doubt the C64 had the best music. So I kind of grew up listening to Commodore 64 music, SID tunes from Rob Hubbard, Martin Galway, those kind of people on my little Walkman cassette player, which we're called in a very kind of crude way. So
Back
that was
in the day.
performative kind of thing. Oh yeah, it's all recorded by putting a pair of headphones into the TV and then sticking it over one of those Benetton cassette recorders and very lo-fi way. But that was the music that I grew up listening to. But I never really had the skills or the ability to program on the C64, which is kind of where I was coming to. You need to have quite a good understanding of machine language, because the way that the SID chip's programmed is it's more like programming a synth than, say, with the Amiga, where you just put some samples in, or with a modern bit of software where you'll connect it up to some sort of synthetic sounds and play some music. With the C64, you're right into the kind of technicalities of programming the SID chip and each of its registers and its filters, and it's all in hexadecimal, and it's quite complicated. So vegetables came about because I've always had this yearning to write SID music, and my first kind of couple of abortive attempts, I got absolutely nowhere at all. So I thought, I'm going to have to learn machine code. So that was how I began writing vegetables. So I ended up writing the game so that I could learn how to write music for the SID chip.
Right, that's really interesting.
Yeah, man. Canal.
I didn't realize that the music was the starting point for that project.
Yeah, well, the music was the last thing I wrote. I mean, that one that you just played there, I wrote that last Saturday, I think it was, or possibly the Saturday before.
Oh, really? I didn't
Just
realize it was that recent either. Wow.
I knew that I needed some in-game music, so I sort of spent an hour on the Saturday and then spent sort of half an hour on the Sunday night just tidying it up and again. Because the thing about SID composing is that on the Amiga, I used to compose on the Amiga, so I would actually sit in front of a computer and work out tunes. With SID, you've got to have a very good idea of where you're going. So the process of putting it into the tracker and making it go onto the chip is sort of the kind of the last thing. So it'd been percolating in my head for a little bit. But yeah, I actually sort of like laid it down for the first time a couple of weeks ago and put it into the game.
And
Nice.
there are these other tunes available on it. I guess it's kind of like a little EP on your Bandcamp. And we're playing
Yeah.
Little Red Courgette eventually. When were those tunes written then?
Little Red Courgette was the one that I was trying to write a Prince style song, because I was having a chat about what music to put into the game, and somebody said you should put some Prince on, like Prince, Vegetables, Little Red Courgette. Didn't end up like that because I don't have the skills to write music like Prince could. A few people do. But yeah, that one was the one that I wrote for the first game, and so that was my first ever SID tune, which I did on SID Tracker 64 on the iPad, which is what Jason Page uses, sort of for Graphgold. And it's an absolutely fantastic tool because it gives you a set of sounds that you can start off with straight away, and you can get straight into composing, which is it breaks down that barrier to entry of the SID chip, which is making sounds involves you kind of like coding a load of complicated hexadecimal numbers. So yes, I put that one together just as a kind of demo to see if I could make a SID tune, which is why it's so sort of relatively simple. It's just kind of it's a couple of little sections that are then transposed up and down with different instruments and so on. But I thought it was quite a nice way to kind of ease myself into the SID chip and give something for what was a very kind of simple first game.
Yeah, it's absolutely lovely stuff. And as we know, you did compose mostly on the Amiga back in the day. So, what was like some of your first work there? Like, how did you get into composing for that?
It's real. Sorry, as I say, with the C64, I'd always wanted to make music, and it was just that I couldn't learn how to do it with the tools of the time. When I got an Amiga for the first time, you started to get the ability of people to kind of make their own games and stuff. It expanded, it bloomed over the C64 because you didn't need as many technical skills. I think it was Pro Tracker or Soundtracker came on an Amiga format cover disc in kind of 1992. And that was how I got into it originally. Was I just downloaded the software. It came with there was a tracker. You didn't need to be able to read or write music, which I couldn't and still barely can do. And you could it came, you know, with some sounds. So from one disc that you got free on the front of a magazine, pretty much anybody could start trying to make some sounds. So I sort of taught myself how to use it by learning this kind of tracker interface, the way it works, and just grafted away at it because I was only kind of 14 at the time, so I didn't have anything else to do with my time. So I'd spend hour after hour after hour where I'd been playing games just trying to make tunes and trying to get something that was creative.
That's actually really quite inspiring, Mike. You say you can't read or write read music, and but you've actually managed to, in your own way, create actually some pumping tunes, you know, as you say, by grafting at it and yeah, just slogging at it. Like, awesome, man. Seriously.
Yeah, I did do a little bit of musical kind of training, which sounds like really, I didn't go to RAD or anything like that, but I did an access to music course here in Hull when I was kind of 17, 18 years old, which gave me just enough of a grounding in kind of basic music theory to be able to apply what I'm doing. But once the Amiga died, I was playing in bands for about sort of 10, 15 years up until 2013. So going out and playing the festival circuit and playing guitar and stuff in bands really helped me hone my songwriting skills, which is why I think that the stuff that I'm producing now is hopefully a little bit more musically interesting than the stuff that I was banging out in the 90s when I was kind of in my teens and just learning.
And do you like compose this stuff while sat there coding it in essentially? Or do you kind of base it on guitar sketches or do you jam on the guitar or anything like that first? Because everyone has a different approach.
Not really. I'm quite odd because although I'm a guitarist natural, I play guitar and bouzouki. That's my kind of my thing. I don't ever write on a guitar for computers. I write on a keyboard for computers, which because I can't play keyboards very well, it forces me to write in a different way than you would on a guitar, and in a way that suits the machine more. So with the Amiga, I was very kind of I got used to the way that it works. What sounds good? What doesn't sound so good? Sounds to avoid, like you can't have long looping samples very much on an Amiga because of the memory limitations. Limiting yourself to four channels and the way that you interplay them. And on something like the C64, for example, you write in a very specific way for the hardware. So you'll put bass and drums onto one channel and you won't use a bass drum, I'll use an octave in bass to take some of the sort of the sound of that drum just to make up for the fact that you've only got the ability to play three instruments at once. So I find that it's easier to write on or for the machine itself than to try and do something else and translate it, which I have done, but it's more of a rare thing for me.
So, is there more in the future to come then? Because at the moment, I see it's mostly kind of work on vegetables and stuff. But if that's your step into learning music on the C64, I'd imagine it's not going to be the last one either.
Yeah, I mean, what I've done is I stopped making music on the Amiga in about 1999, went off into the world of real music, and I've only very recently, as in kind of this year, come back into computer music again. I've only been coding on the C64 for just over 2 months, so it's all kind of relatively new to me, so I'm not really established in any way, and that's why I kind of feel a bit of imposter syndrome to be sort of talking to you today. But I've got a couple. I was the reason that I came back to these retro machines again is that kind of 25 years after I did some stuff on the Amiga, I got asked to come back and do this remake of Black Dawn, or this new game in the Black Dawn series, which is a series of dungeon crawlers on the Amiga. I was asked to come back by the coder Sean, and I kind of was up in an hour and thinking, well, do I really want to go back and have to get an Amiga and do all this stuff? And eventually, kind of twisted my arm because of how easy it was in emulation, and I thought, well, I've got nothing better to do, and came back in and created the music for that. But since then, I kind of got a bit of a feel for it, which is how I ended up coding on the Commodore 64, because I thought, wouldn't it be cool to write a game? But writing a game even on an Amiga is kind of a bit of a daunting prospect. But with a tiny little 64K computer and with the with a very low barrier to entry, And with it's, you know, if you can't quite draw very well or you can't really do coding very well, it sort of has a charm of its own when you work on the 8-bit machines. So that's what brought me back into that again. And since then, I did vegetables, so I've created stuff for that game that I made myself. I'm in talks with a couple of C64 programmers who really needed music that I might work with. And I've got two Amiga projects that I'm currently working on as well.
Nice.
Yeah, because it's great how much this stuff is still going on.
Yeah, keeping it alive, man. Like,
Absolutely, there are still brand new games being made. And I think it was just the other day I saw art design for a whole new physical release where they're bringing it out on tape and everything is a brand new game.
yeah, that's why Vegetables are going to be coming out on disc for the C64, and the Black Dawn game and Shadows of Sergoth, which I'm working on now, are both going to be coming out as kind of boxed releases, which is a bit mad that people are buying these days. What I find really nice is I think the same thing that appeals to coders about making these games is the same thing that appeals to me for the music, because while I could technically, I could go out and I could buy a load of studio equipment and set up a home studio these days, and it's actually, it's feasible to do that. And I could get myself a little electronic drum kit or a drum machine, I could make all my own music. On the whole, when people do that, it sounds dreadful. It sounds very kind of overproduced almost because you've got so much available to you. But when I think you restrict yourself to this really, really simple sound chips, it forces you to focus on the composition. So I think if, give me a studio full of equipment, I would make you some really, really boring kind of Jean-Michel Jarre, Vangelis kind of nonsense that nobody'd really enjoy, and also that probably wouldn't ever really gather an audience. Similarly, if I went out and started playing folk music in the pubs and clubs again, it's difficult to get an audience. But with this stuff like the SID chip, there's a whole audience of people that really love the sound, that are really supportive and really want to get behind you. Unlike in the real music world, it's everyone seems to be pulling in the same direction and sparing each other on rather than fighting and trying to, grapple over the money, because it's not about making money, it's just about having a bit of fun with these kind of limited machines that you're working with.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's funny because Rob Hubbard himself said very, very similar things about how as things have progressed, we're just drowning in technology now and the results are no more imaginative or actually less imaginative than they were back in the late 80s or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Hubbard's an excellent example because he is my all-time favorite musician of all time. It's fair to say. I didn't even realize all the time in the '80s that he lived kind of 2 miles down the road in Hull, because I was a young kid, and yet I was there, absolutely obsessed with the stuff that he was producing and the sounds it was getting out. But listen to the stuff that he came out with on the Amiga and on the Mega Drive, and while you can still hear that spark, you can still tell that it's him and it's got all of that thing. As the sound quality got better, in inverted commas, as it got closer to real music, I think that. That difference kind of dissipated slightly, and almost sort of lost some of the spark. Because for me, anything that Rob Hubbard did outside of the C64 just don't have quite that same magic as the C64 stuff does. In the same way that there's people on the Amiga that I really like Alistair Brimble or Format, Matt Simmons. He's absolutely fantastic musicians that were just perfect for that machine at that time. And again, there's the games that are coming out now where you've got full orchestral soundtracks and so on. It's a different kind of skill set, isn't it, to get the best out of the different machines.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's something that you have to do full university courses on harmony and melody and the different instrumental groups and how to get the most out of them.
It's like as technology evolves, the requirements for the music and the technical side has increased. You know, you need to use all these new bits of technology, and it's like, well, I can make a better thing with old school tunes and with the old school.
And the more stuff that you're forced to learn, like for example about orchestral stuff, the more stuff that you're forced to learn, then you're kind of going to start following tropes and start like repeating things, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it puts a straitjacket onto you. And the stuff that I did in music theory was very, very restricting because it was, you've got to come back to the root note on the fourth beat of every single bar, and you've got to go through the following changes, the following order, and you can only change from this chord to this chord at certain times, and it's got to come back to it. There's so many rules that you have to follow in orchestral music, or I mean, you don't have to follow them, but if you don't follow them, it seems unusual. Whereas the way that I worked is I just kind of like hit notes on a keyboard until it sounded right. I never knew what a key was or what key I was playing in, or even necessarily what notes I was playing, because the instruments, particularly on the Amiga, would often be tuned differently to what they were tuned to on the keyboard. So I just kind of made it fit. And that playing by ear thing is it's feasible on something up to and including the kind of Amiga, possibly Mega Drive sort of sound chips. get anything more complicated than that, and you've got 32 channels of, you know, polyphonic orchestral audio, you need to understand exactly what's going on behind it. Otherwise, it's impossible to make something that sounds good, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
You get lost in the forest.
Yeah, and you lose that game music genre that essentially it was a genre. We've spoken about it on the show before, a certain sound, a certain approach to music.
That's what I think is lacking in modern games, and I've been really switched off by a lot of modern games. Is the things that are appealing to me is the retro stuff, the indie games, the stuff like Fez, the stuff like, I forgot what his name is now, but that's the one where you're on a farm
Stardew Valley. Podcast.
Stardew Valley, stuff like that, where you've still got it's high quality, high fidelity sound, but it's still got that distinctly video game feel to it. Whereas the modern games that are trying to be like movies, like all the kind of Call of Duty and stuff like that, just switches me right off. It's just background noise.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many just boring AAA games with those kind of soundtracks that just don't, and as a big video game music fan, aren't even really on my radar.
Yeah, they just get lost. They're just lost in it.
Mm. Well, that's excellent, Mike. It's been great to speak to you today. Thanks for agreeing to have us call you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And best of luck with the show. I've been thoroughly enjoying it the last few weeks. I've been listening, and I've been listening to the podcast for a little bit longer. So, you know, keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you so much. And hopefully we might just bump into each other at the 8-Bit Symphony next week.
May well do so, yeah.
Yeah, you never know. All right, so have yourself a good night then, Mike.
You too.
Bye for now.
Cheers, Mike.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.